Isaiah 40, behold God. The psalmist says, I am fearfully and wonderfully made, in Psalm 139 and verse 14. We began to look last week, as we begin to study the attributes of God, right at the beginning, the existence of God. The Bible is a book about God. And concerning God's existence, there are only two types of people, according to the Bible. There are those who know that God exists, God is. And there is the other type of person that the Bible calls the fool. Someone who is not using their knowledge correctly. It says that both in Psalm 14:1 and Psalm 53 and verse 1. Anyone who says there's no God is a fool. To profess no God is foolishness. The atheist is not clever. The atheist is against the universal reason of the whole of humanity in all of our history. Stephen Charnock, the Puritan, in his great book on the attributes of God, says this: this universal consent is not prejudiced by some few dissenters. Is it not folly, he says, for any man to deny or doubt the being of God? To dissent from all mankind and to stand in contradiction to human nature. End of quote. Anyone who's an atheist, Charnock says, they're standing in contradiction to human nature and they're against the whole of the history of mankind. The professor, Richard Dawkins, is a fool. He is. He, in his mind, his thinking, goes against the stream of reason of every tribe, tongue, and nation in the whole of world history. And even in our day, in our heathen nation, the United Kingdom, atheists are nowhere near a majority. They are a minority group. Now, you wouldn't think that to hear them talking on the TV, but they are a minority group, atheists. And worldwide, atheists are a minuscule, irrelevant bunch of fools. They're a very small group, but they are proud fools because they think that they are the only ones that have knowledge and that they're cleverer than everybody else. And they are truthfully obnoxious in their pride. Now, last week we began to look upon some of the evidences for our own help and interest to the existence of God. We began by comparing. There only is two views, really. There's the common sense view of how the world originated, how creation came into being. And then there's the foolish view. The common sense view is that life, earth, and everything on the earth was made and planted by God. He created everything in 6 days out of nothing, and there's design and a designer and so on. The foolish view is there is no God, and in the beginning there was nothing but an infinitesimal dot which contained all the matter in the universe, which exploded and the matter came out of it, contrary to the laws of physics and black holes, which say matter gets sucked in, doesn't come out. But contrary to the law of physics, all matter came out of a black an infinitesimal dot, and all life basically evolved from rock. Or another version of that view, the evolution view, is by the scientist called Crick, who discovered human DNA, he sees how impossible it is for life cells to evolve from rock. So he actually believes in directed panspermia, which basically means that an alien spaceship crashed in the North Pole, and from that spaceship, life infected the Earth. Even though there's no evidence for any alien spaceship at the North Pole, he believes aliens planted life on Earth. Now, which is more likely or more wise? Life on Earth was made by God, a designer and a maker, or that life and everything we know evolved from a rock by chance? What, honestly, which is more sensible? And then last week we also looked at the knowledge of God, that there is a God, is innate. It's built in to humanity. Every tribe, every people, every nation ever discovered has some kind of belief in a God or gods. They worship something, even if it's a tree or a hill or whatever it is. But belief in a God is natural. It's built into humanity in the whole of history. And then we looked briefly at the ontological argument, which was that our finite, limited minds could not dream up an infinite, unlimited God. That belief that there is an infinite God did not originate and cannot originate in that which is finite. It's a logical argument. Then, lastly, last week we looked at the cosmological argument, which is cause and effect. We look at a wall and we say that wall has a cause. Something caused it. It was built. Every effect has a cause. It's a law of physics. Real science. And something as big and complicated as the universe and everything in it needs to have a bigger cause, a more intelligent cause than the thing itself. The effect is always greater than the cause. The cause is always greater than the effect. I said that the wrong way around. Because the cause is God. So before we move on, I speak to you, of course, because you're brothers and sisters, but I know the messages are recorded. And in our day, many people in our country have swallowed the idea of evolution and atheism. And I want to ask them, as well as you and myself, these questions. Don't just record these things academically in your mind. Think about them. I would urge anyone listening to think about these things and come to believe one view or the other view. Ask yourself in your own mind, is life designed and made, or did it come from a rock by chance? Face the facts and really think. That's what unsaved people, I believe, they don't do that. Knowledge of God is built into human nature. Face that fact. And everybody really knows that. And whoever we are, even the most staunch atheist, I believe, in the world, knows that one day you will stand before God. And your foolish views will not matter then. You know he will be your judge, and you're merely suppressing that innate knowledge of the truth. He is infinite, and you know that you couldn't dream up an infinite God. You also know that the cause of everything you see in creation on earth and beyond earth in the universe, God is the cause. The ultimate cause. And anyone listening who's an atheist or pretends to be an atheist, you are without excuse. And you can go ahead and continue in your atheism, continue suppressing this built-in knowledge of God, but I have to say this to you, if you do that, you're most certainly a fool. because you are deliberately and willfully suppressing the truth that you know is the truth. And if you do not repent, you'll be damned. And it says in Revelation 20, there's a great white throne of judgment, and the dead, small and great, will be raised, and they will all stand before God, and the books will be opened. And the dead will be judged out of the things that are written in the books, plural, according to their works. And the only people that will not be cast into the lake of fire are those whose names are found written in the book of life. So, for any atheist listening, don't talk to me about direct panspermia or atheistic evolutionary Big Bang theory. You're going to stand before the judge of all the earth and all creation and give an account of every idle word and everything you've ever done in life. And on that day, it will be proved once and for all that if you're an atheist, you're one of the biggest fools in the whole universe. Unless your name's written in the Lamb's Book of Life through trusting in Jesus Christ. God exists. We are to tremble at him and worship him in fear. The whole nations, the scripture says, are like a drop in a bucket. Ever washed a car and you empty out the bucket when you're finished and there's a wee drop or two in the bottom? All the nations to God are just like that wee drop in a bucket. It's nothing. He's the infinite, eternal, unchangeable God. And for any human to say, there is no God, you know what you are? You're a jumped up piece of dust. It says in Isaiah 40 and verse 17, all the nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him as less than nothing and vanity. So where do you stand? We do not come ever. And if for any atheist listening, you're listening to these sermons, you're not actually coming. You think you're coming to investigate God. It's actually the other way around. God has led you to listen to the sermons because he is investigating you. And he has prompted you to think about these things and realize that there is a God. And he's prompted you to listen to these things for you to decide whether or not you're going to remain a fool that doesn't think. God is trying to prompt your brain to work. The things I've given so far are facts. Let us continue. This morning, another evidence for the existence of God is this. Number one, the teleological argument. This is a great argument. It's simply called the design argument. If we see something, we can see from looking at the thing that has been designed for a particular purpose or planned. Look at the pews you're sitting on. There's evidence, even in any of us to look at those pews, there's evidence of a design, isn't there? There was planning went into those, and then they were made. They didn't just happen along by themselves. A person thought about it and designed them, planned them, gave it to the craftsman, the carpenter, who made them. They were designed and made. The end of the seats, the back of the seat, the bottom of the seat, the legs of the seat. It all had to be measured and cut and designed and made. And we can see from looking at the chairs or the pews or anything else, the table, it doesn't matter. We can see from looking, merely by looking at it, that it was designed by intelligence, an intelligent person. Didn't happen. It was designed. Now, when I was in White Abbey, we had a set of pews in the church as well. And they were made in the year 1885. But you could look at the pews and you no doubt remember them from when you were down there sometimes. And you could look at them and say, they were designed, weren't they? They had to be designed. We can tell by looking at them. Now, we don't know who designed those pews. We never knew the designer, because he was dead long before we were even born. But we don't need to know the designer to know they were designed. The thing itself bears evidence of design. Design and made by a person. Design always infallibly points to a designer. When an archaeologist, I'm going to give quite a number of examples, is digging in the forest in Germany and discovers flint arrowheads in the soil. What is his assumption? He immediately knows there are flint arrowheads that were designed and made by human life. Designed and planned and made for a reason. Even though they're very primitive and simple in their design, he knows they were designed. Nobody assumes when they find the flint arrowheads in the German forests, you know, they just happened by themselves. Nobody ever thinks that. Even an atheistic archaeologist, when he finds flint arrowheads in the forest, knows that that's proof of human life, design, designer, maker. And when this affects everything. It applies to everything. A mousetrap is a very simple design. It has eight parts: a pedestal, a base, a spring, two U-nails, a little bar, a hinge, and a swinging arm. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, counting the two U-nails. Eight parts to a mousetrap. Very simple, but obviously designed and planned by intelligent life. It didn't evolve by chance. And with a mousetrap, we also see not only design, we see also irreducible complexity. That means you can't take anything away from it without it stopping working. You take any part away from a mousetrap, say we take the spring away, will it work? No. If we leave it sitting there for a million years, will a spring ever evolve on it and it will work? No. It can't be any less. See, evolutionists sometimes say, well, the creature evolved and then the various mutations, these mutations didn't work so well, so it evolved different mutations and became better over time. But there's irreducible complexity. So there's an animal evolved, say, without a mouth. How's it ever going to get to the second generation? It'll starve to death in the first generation. There's irreducible complexity, same as a mousetrap. So when you take anything away, it doesn't work, and that's it over. Design and irreducible complexity. Now, let me give you something quite amazing as evidence of design. The smallest, simplest living cell is called a genome, or genome, G-E-N-O-M-E. And in one genome, there are 482 genes, just in one genome, 482 genes. And each gene of the 482, each gene has 580,000, what they call base pairs. That's a lot more complicated than the parts on a mousetrap. The human genome has 3 billion base pairs, but they all assembled and got into proper order and into their pairs in the proper order by chance. Themselves, apparently. They assembled themselves by chance when a mousetrap can't even do that and it's only 8 parts. Design. Fearfully and wonderfully made. Anyone who believes the human genome put itself together with all that many pairs in exact order, you most certainly are a fool. That happened by itself? From a rock? You're mad. You really are. And I certainly, anyone that believes that, I wouldn't. If you were a boss and an owner of a factory, would you want someone like that working in your manufacturing factory? No thanks. Design points to a designer, and the design plan has to be followed down, and people make the thing. It doesn't happen by itself. The human brain shows great evidence of design. We see the design of God in the human brain. It weighs 3 pounds, or probably about 1.5 kilos for modern people. I prefer pounds. And according to science, quote, Isaac Asimov says this, quote, it is the most complex, orderly arrangement of matter in the universe, end of quote. It's more complicated. The human brain is more complicated than 1,000 computers. And it was the human brain that designed and made computers. And yet, we are expected to believe it is a product of chance. Do complicated things make themselves by chance? Do complicated computers make themselves by chance? Even if you put all the parts together? No. Design. Design. A Boeing 747 jumbo jet has 6 million parts in one airplane. And if all those parts are assembled correctly, it flies. If we were to put the 6 million parts into a field, would it ever by chance assemble all those parts correctly? Wouldn't assemble any parts in any way, but would it assemble all the parts correctly ever? No, most certainly not. One human genome is 99 times more complicated, more parts than a jumbo jet. Or a jumbo jet, Boeing 747 has 1% of the parts of one human genome. How could it possibly have assembled itself? Design, designer, maker. These are facts. Information. This is perhaps the best illustration. Information. What do we know about information? Information, we can think about it in this way. Letters on a page of a book. Information. But to be information, the letters on the page of a book have to be put into proper order, don't they? In order to make sense, the letters have to be assembled in the proper way. When we were in school and we wrote our comprehension, our stories, the letters need to be put in the proper order. An explosion in the printer, says one of the creationists, didn't cause the Oxford Dictionary. Letters have to be in proper order. Information has to be in proper order to work or make sense. In human DNA is information, like letters in proper order. If one letter is out of place, it doesn't work. In one pinhead size, pinhead of human DNA, how much information is there? How many paperback books of information are in a pinhead of human DNA? Jonathan Safari says, there is enough information to fill how many paperback books in one pinhead of human DNA? He says, 300 piles of paperback books. How high are they piled? 6 foot? 10 foot? No, he says, there's enough information in a pinhead of human DNA to fill 300 separate piles of paperback books, each of them reaching to the moon. That's how much information is in a pinhead of human DNA. And if one letter is not in the right order, it doesn't work. If anyone thinks that a random explosion put that amount of information in proper order by itself, I have only one word to say to them. And it was a word said by the American commander of the Battle of the Bulge when they were surrounded by the Germans in World War II in the Ardennes Forest. The German commander sent to the American general and offered him terms of surrender, and the American general sent back his answer, and his answer was one word, nuts. Nuts, that's what he said to him. Well, if anyone believes that 300 piles of paperback books reaching up to the moon, that amount of letters and information can assemble itself by chance from a rock, you are a nut job. Definitely are, you are. There's no way it could ever possibly happen. Anyone who really believes that needs a straight jacket, don't they? Really? Let's be honest. Design always points to a designer. Always. And that leads to someone making the thing. Secondly, the second evidence this morning that points to a designer or points to God, a creator, is the law of entropy, or the second law of thermodynamics, as they call it. It's a law of physics, real science. What is entropy? It's simply this, and Colin mentioned it last week when we were talking after the meeting. Things left to themselves, just left for time alone, tend to decay. They get worse instead of better. They become disordered instead of more tidy. Quote, if you let anything go, it deteriorates. That's the law of entropy. My car, if you just let it go, don't get it serviced, don't wash it, don't put oil in the engine, it'll just stop working pretty fast and it'll break. With our own bodies, if we don't try and maintain them, they will run down and wear down and get sick. If you let anything go by itself and do not attend to it and care for it, it will eventually disintegrate and wear out. That's entropy. And even if we do try and look after the thing, and we attempt to maintain it and keep it in good condition, that only slows down entropy. Because the car still will eventually rust and fade away and break. The second law of thermodynamics, or entropy, is universal. Living things, humans and trees, it applies to us. And still objects, even such as rocks and metal. Things left to themselves for a long time do not get better by themselves, but they get worse. Facts. Energy, in the area of energy, for example. Energy wanes and decreases. If you have a ball and you roll the ball, what happens to it? It doesn't keep going at the same speed. The energy in that ball slowly wears down until the ball is stopped. The moon orbits the Earth, but the gravitational pull of the Earth, the speed of the Earth, and the orbit, the moon is receding, it's going away from us 1 inch per year. The gravity is winding down. That's entropy, the second law of thermodynamics. Structures become more disorganized given a long time. Information becomes disorganized. If you just leave it, that's why on your computer you need to defragment the hard drive, because the information gets saved in there, it goes all disordered, and you have to put it back in order all the time, or it slows down your computer. Everything by nature teaches entropy. Everything tends towards winding down and disorder. In other words, time and chance doesn't make anything better. It does not assemble information. It doesn't make it more complicated. But the opposite happens. Time and chance wears things out. Things get worse over time. You see, evolutionists say billions of years of time and chance creates and brings order, advanced by nature. This is totally against the second law of thermodynamics. It's against the physical evidence we see around us. Albert Einstein says concerning the second law of thermodynamics, it is the premier law of all science. Sir Arthur Eddington says, it is the supreme law of the entire universe. Everything wears down and gets worse. Entropy says that time and chance does not lead to evolution, but leads to devolution. Things getting worse, not better. Picture this, then. Say, for example, in a few weeks I said to you, I've got loads of money and I'm going to build a house, and I've bought a field up near Glenmorry. Come on up and see. I haven't, I'm just pretending. And you come up to see the field where we have bought, and sitting on the edge of the field are six chairs. And there we are all sitting on the chairs. What are you doing there, Paul? We're waiting for a house to appear in the field. It's never going to happen, sure, it's not, by itself. But let's give evolution a chance. Imagine we fenced the field and we will put all the raw materials in the one place. That's what evolutionists say. All different chemicals, all in the one pot, as it were, the one liquid, the one part, same part of the sea. Get all the raw materials in the one place. So we'll stick into the field sand, cement, stones, bricks, tiles, pipes, wires, meter box, radiators, oil boiler, copper wire, wooden doors, carpets, plaster, and a fireplace, and lights on all the switches. And they're all in the field. All in the one place. Now we'll wait for evolution to build the house. Entropy will happen. Evolution won't happen. Because a house is not complicated at all compared with the human genome. So if a house can't build itself, how on earth can a human genome? What will happen if we wait 10 years? The house will be a wee bit built, it'll improve. No, the sand will be washed away, the cement will be ruined already, and the radiators will be rusted. Decay. Worse, not better. In 1,000 years, you don't even have to go to millions, in 1,000 years, even the bricks and the dust that they have turned into will be washed away, and there'll be nothing left, because time and chance won't build a house. Time and chance doesn't build anything, because the law of entropy ensures that. Time and chance is useless. It will only lead to further disorder. The complexity of life, human life, the human brain, all the animals, all the plants, the whole universe, is made, designed, made, and sustained by the all-sufficient God. And it is all slowly winding down in God's perfect timing to the judgment. The evidence for the existence of God. We see it all around us. It's the most logical, sensible view of reality, that God designed and made everything. And any other view is utter folly. God exists. Because if he didn't exist, nothing would exist. The facts prove this. Design proves it. Entropy proves it. All these things prove that evolution from nothing or from an infinitesimal dot is a lie. There is a God. We know that it's built in. Compare the views, the innate knowledge, the ontological argument. Can a finite mind dream up an infinite? No. Cause and effect. Every effect has a cause. Design, complexity, entropy. All these laws of science prove there is a God. Or as it says in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 25 and 26. To whom then will you liken me? Or shall I be equal, saith the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and behold who hath created these things that bringeth out their host, that's the stars, their host by number. He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power and not one of them faileth. Man can't name the stars. We can't even name all the globular clusters. M, this, and then a number, M, M, M. God knows all their names. God exists. You're a sinner. And you're going to meet him one day. And there's only one way to meet God safely. And that is by in and through Jesus Christ, through faith in him. Stop suppressing the truth. Suppressing the truth will damn you. But look to God in Christ. God says in Isaiah, look unto me, and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God, and there is none else. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Thank you for your attention, and the Lord bless you, and we'll continue with the spirituality of God next time, God willing.